The fifth year.
Yes, my lord. Of course not, my lord. I am yours, my lord.
Summer blasted past in a heat wave that failed to warm him. The days were too short and the nights endless. He bowed and he knelt. He drank elf-made wine with the Malfoys. He flattered and lied. He read between all the lines and then later reported. There was some joy to be found. In the dark, dank house that reeked with memories of Regulus, he needled Black about his enforced inactivity, his complete, utter uselessness, and he felt a little lighter for it. He wondered about Potter at times, shut away in the suburbs of Surrey in much the same manner, but he could not muster the same kind of enthusiasm. He remembered Potter's face at the leaving feast and thought of how new he was to this darkness, of how he himself might have felt, locked up without knowledge, without even a word. Black deserved it, unquestionably. Potter. He was less sure. But Dumbledore had his reasons. Dumbledore always, always had reasons. And as for Severus himself, he deserved all of it, none of it, being useful, being used. He just couldn't tell in which order. Summer sped past. Potter was not dead. He was a shell, an empty husk, barren.
Did he not fight?
Severus said, and felt something tremble to life inside him.
He did, Dumbledore said. Arabella reports seeing the Patronus, but it appears that there were too many of them.
There were hundreds of them on Black at the end of his third year.
Yes, Dumbledore said, sounding troubled.
He straightened a stack of papers on his desk and sighed.
It appears I will have to...
I can do it, Severus said. It is no longer an issue.
Indeed.
Severus gazed at him in silence.
You never cease to amaze me,
Dumbledore said, lips edging into a smile.
Very well. You must not let them see you.
Severus nodded and rose to his feet.
Severus... Dumbledore's voice caught him when he was already at the door. Are you quite certain that you are up to the task?
Severus turned.
Why would I not be?
Dumbledore was no longer smiling.
You passed up at least three perfectly sound openings for sarcastic rejoinders just now, he said, as you have done all summer.
I will see to it,
Severus said, and walked out the door. As always, Dumbledore's insights turned out to be right. Severus very nearly failed. Hidden in the bushes and disillusioned to boot, he watched them swoop onto little Whinging, lifting his wand as the coldness descended. He remembered Lily throwing her arms around him under a bright summer sun, but no matter how hard he tried to feel it, a strange blankness remained. His Patronus sputtered in vague wisps of white, and the first two Dementors slid past unimpeded. The smell of coal tar hung heavy in the air. He thought of Potter's face at the leaving feast, but no, that was not helpful. He looked back, desperately casting about for anything, and his mind flashed to Potter's face at the feast 3 years prior, younger and innocent still, and filled with such open, unblemished joy. The dough burst from his wand like lightning, blasting the rest of the Dementors away. Frantic, Severus half started for the alleyway, then held himself back and hovered, uncertain. Mercifully, the two that had escaped emerged long moments later, chased by a brilliant white stag. He only caught a glimpse of the boy as Mrs. Fig ushered him past. Only a glimpse, but enough to see that whilst Potter had shot up in height, he had not put on the weight to match. That for someone who had spent an uneventful few weeks, he looked haggard and drawn. Severus watched from the shadows and thought that Potter's triumphal close to his first year had hardly made Severus happy when it had occurred. Funny how some memories changed colors, how their flavor could alter, given time. It might have been funny had it not been so profoundly disturbing, given the choice between reflecting on his newfound desire to see Potter happy and pretending it had never happened, Severus chose to avoid the former like the plague. He still flitted in and out of number 12 after Potter had been moved there, but he left as swiftly as was feasible to prevent their paths from crossing, to ensure he caught not so much as a glimpse of the boy. His strategy might have worked had it not been for Potter's disastrous encounter with a cursed goblet during an unobserved moment of cleaning the drawing room. Both the timing and setting were nothing short of atrocious. Severus arrived the previous night, but Black chose to hang about the room like a bad odor, drinking and sulking until sunrise, at which point the remaining occupants of the house forced Severus to hide in the pantry. Not for the first time, he wished he had retained Potter's cloak for his own purposes when he first got his hands on it. In the end, he cut it extremely fine, ducking his head around the open door just in time to shoot a wordless spell over Potter's shoulder. The goblet shattered into a million shards, and Potter blinked, startled, before reaching for the dustpan and brush. Severus sighed, dropping his wand, and although he knew he should leave straight away, his eyes stuck to the boy as though he were flypaper. In the next instant, a hand grabbed his shoulder, and he found himself pulled away from the door and slammed against a corridor wall.
"What the hell do you think you are doing?" Severus pocketed his wand. "None of your business, Black," he said, shaking the man off.
Black's eyes narrowed to slits.
"When you're spying on my grandson, you can bet it's my business," he hissed, keeping his voice low. "Why are you still here, anyway? I swear I just saw you leave."
True enough. The last order meeting had been scheduled first thing in the morning to allow Lupin to attend.
"I found I'd forgotten something rather important."
"Oh, yeah?" Black said. "Passed up your chance to leer at a 15-year-old boy, that it?"
Severus couldn't help it. Absurd as the implication was, Black just looked so deliciously angry. Languidly crossing his arms in front of his chest, he allowed his lips to curve in a slow, deliberate smile. The reaction was immediate. Black's fists clenched at his sides, beginning to tremble. A vein at his temple throbbed sharply in time.
"I'm warning you, Snape," he said. "I've heard all about how you treat him, but I'm not going to let you get away with it any longer."
"Are you not?" Severus said, enjoying himself immensely.
"No, I swear, you lay so much as one slimy finger on that boy." "There's just one minor problem with your precious little threats," Severus cut in very softly. "You see, you appear to have forgotten that. Very soon, both Potter and I shall be back at Hogwarts, whilst you remain here, stuck on a leash. So do me a favor, Black. Don't bark when you know you can't bite. Go back to your basket and practice filleting yourself."
He patted Black on the head as he began to move past him.
"There's a good little boy."
And he swept from the house before Black could work up the nerve to rip out his eyeballs. For once, Severus was glad of the beginning of the school year and the classes it brought to fill up his days. Even the Dark Lord had to acknowledge that a teacher who missed too many lessons would appear inadvisably suspicious. He did not usually set the draft of peace as the first assignment of the term, and yet the dark smudges still painted beneath Potter's eyes during the feast seemed to compel him, ridiculous though it was. As long shots went, this one might as well have been aiming for the moon, but if there was even a remote chance that Granger, perhaps, might grasp its usefulness. Pathetic. What the fuck was wrong with him these days? He could not muster a suitable degree of loathing as Potter sidled into his class, but, conscious of Draco's watchful eyes, needled him regardless, refusing to feel guilty for it. Besides, it was a good chance to assess the true state of the boy. Potter's initial glare at him was encouraging, but when Severus pointed out the flaws in his brewing later, Potter looked not angry but crestfallen, answering in soft, muted syllables without once giving him cheek. And that was... It was so unlike him that Severus found it immensely disquieting. But what on earth he was meant to do with the information was beyond him. He could hardly invite Potter round to his office for a heart-to-heart. The very concept was laughable. He should not even care in the first place. What was wrong with him, for fuck's sake?
"Please excuse me," Dumbledore said. "I hate to leave you all after being the bearer of such terrible news, but I'm afraid I cannot keep the Ministry officials waiting any longer. Professor Umbridge is keeping them company in my office, but they are quite understandably eager to discuss this matter most promptly."
For long seconds after the door had closed behind him, the silence in the staff room was so thick that one could have cut it with a knife. Then, very quietly,
"I cannot believe this," Flitwick said.
"Did he?"
said Charity Burbage.
"Did he seem depressed to any of you?" Shaking her head, Pomona Sprout drew out a handkerchief and began sobbing into it quietly.
"He missed the Quidditch tryouts," said Hooch,
"but that was because he was in detention with Umbridge. I got the strong impression that he wanted to go."
"He seemed very angry,"
said Minerva, white as a ghost.
"But I thought that was only to be expected under the circumstances. I never thought he would go and—"
She broke off.
"You couldn't have known," said Sinistra. "None of us did."
"What I don't understand," Hooch said, "is why he didn't come to any of us if he was feeling that bad. Surely we've made it clear that whenever a student is in need, help is at hand." Low murmurs of acknowledgement swept through the room.
"You're all morons," Severus exploded. "Every last one of you."
All his colleagues turned to stare at him, except Sprout, who only sobbed harder. Flitwick moved to her side and began stroking her arm, opening his mouth.
"Now really, Severus."
But Severus did not let him finish.
"Of course Potter has been depressed," he snarled. "He's only had it painted across his forehead in scarlet. Ignoring, for 1 minute, the patently obvious cause, is it truly surprising after everything he's been through in previous years? He has battled the Dark Lord not once, but thrice, in as many different incarnations, as well as a basilisk. He has faced the traitor who caused his parents to die and watched him escape. He has seen his friends petrified and possessed. And oh, let's not forget the small matter of being repeatedly attacked by Dementors, shall we? And throughout this, you have all treated him as though he is capable of walking on water. So of course he wouldn't bloody well go and ask someone for help."
Absolute silence. Then, "If you truly had such brilliant insight into the boy's state of mind all along," said Hooch with asperity, "then how is it you utterly failed to intercede before he could throw himself off the astronomy tower?" Severus reeled backward as if struck by a physical blow. For a mere instant he wanted to scratch her eyes out, but no, it was fair. It was only fair.
"Now, Rolanda," said Minerva, her voice less than steady, "I hardly think casting blame is going to—"
"Severus, please."
She placed a hand on his shoulder.
"Sit down, would you? You seem very upset." "I am not," Severus said, "upset."
"Of course you are," Minerva said. She ran her hand down the side of his face, her mouth a curiously curved line, her eyes brimming wetly with tears.
"Never in a million years would I have dreamt that you'd actually come to care for—" "I do not," Severus snarled, pushing her away, "care about Potter. And I am not," as his stride swallowed the staff room floor, "bloody upset."
He slammed the door in his wake. He was upset. He was extremely upset. He was so very upset that he utterly failed to plan. ducking into the first secluded spot he could find and setting the time turner without even thinking. Then it was night. "Your fault, your fault, your fault," his footsteps echoed all the way up the stairs. Yes, Hooch had him dead to rights. He was the worst sort of person, the cruelest sort of person. He was nothing but an atrocity, an abomination. By the time he reached the top, Potter already stood on the parapet. Severus ground to a halt, staring. His boots must have made a sound, or perhaps he did, because Potter turned slightly, and then they were staring at one another.
"For heaven's sake," Severus rasped, "don't do it."
For a moment, surprise held Potter's features captive, but it vanished a split second later, and Potter laughed, a harsh sound completely lacking in humor. "Like you care," he said. "You of all bloody people. Be thrilled to finally get rid of me."
"I can assure you, Potter," Severus said, taking a few cautious steps closer, "your death is the very last thing I desire."
"Oh, really?" Potter said. "Could have fooled me. What was it you said in class the other day? That happy moment of farewell. Well, you won't even have to wait till next year, Lucky. Don't you dare come any closer. I swear, I will do it. I'll jump."
Severus, who had been inching his way ever closer, froze again. Frantically, he mentally flipped through any given number of spells that could pull Potter toward him and onto safe ground, but no, that was far, far too risky. There were numerous reports of situations like this, of spontaneous blasts of magic preventing such rescue attempts if only the intent was sufficiently strong. And given that Potter's magic had allowed him to plunge to the ground fully conscious, his intent was not in question. Instead, he stretched his arms out before him, raising them as though in supplication.
"Very well," he said. "I'm not moving, see? I'll be staying right here, and we can just have a little chat."
"A chat," Potter said, and laughed again. "Right. Lovely night, isn't it?" Severus took a deep breath.
"Nothing," he said. "No problem is so bad that it cannot be solved.
Fuck off."
"Another tactic, then. Whatever you're feeling right now, you're not alone. I understand."
"You understand nothing. You don't know what it's like being me. Nobody does. And how could they? They don't have this."
He pointed toward his forehead, and Severus feared for a desperate heartbeat that the moment might tip him over the edge, ruining their lives.
"You think I'd get off on it, being famous? Well, you bloody well try being me."
"And you think," Severus said, more heatedly than he'd intended, "that I cannot possibly grasp where you're at when I do. Newsflash, Potter, you're not the only one who's ever suffered. You think I don't understand, but where you're standing right now, trust me, I've stood there before. You feel empty and cold all of the time. You tell yourself that you're happy so long as you keep busy, but you know that's a lie. Really, it's that you cannot even feel sadness anymore. You can't cry, except maybe at night, when you have the same dream over and over again, and it wakes you up drenched in sweat. You feel angry all the time, except sometimes when you should do, and then you simply can't seem to care. Believe me, Potter, I know."
Gratifyingly, Potter looked rather taken aback, sufficiently so to allow Severus to subtly creep a little closer. Unfortunately, the spell his words had woven broke shortly thereafter.
"And you're going to tell me that it gets better, right?" Potter said.
Severus's mouth twisted.
"It does. How stupid do you think I am? I mean, for fuck's sake, just look at you. In 4 years, I've not heard you laugh a single bloody time.
Oh, sure, I've seen you smile, but frankly, if I'm going to end up at a point where I can only feel happiness at the expense of others, thanks, but no thanks. I'd much rather die."
Well, that probably should have been more predictable.
"But you're not me," Severus said. "For one, you have friends. Think of them for a moment. What would Weasley and Granger?
They wouldn't care."
"Are we speaking of the same individuals here?" Severus said sharply. "The Weasley and Granger who've consistently raced to the hospital wing the moment you so much as received a scratch for 4 years? The ones who've leapt blindly into absurd and heart-stopping danger simply because you were headed for it? Repeatedly? I can assure you, Potter, they'd care. You jump off this tower, they will be devastated. They'll never forget it. Never.
For several long, drawn-out moments, Potter actually seemed to waver. His eyes flitted from Severus to the solid ground that he stood on, then back out again, into the air, then back to Severus.
"I know what you're doing," he said, "and it's not going to work. You can't guilt-trip me out of this. Also, you've bloody moved. Again!"
Severus did his best to attempt to look guilty, but the fact that he failed mattered little, because with a final glare, Potter turned, staring out into the night. He lifted one foot, just slightly. Severus stared at him, desperately. True, he had come a lot closer. He was right up against the parapet himself now, but still several feet to the side. He could probably make a leap for it, but that seemed altogether too risky. He did the only thing he could do. He climbed up on the ledge, beside Potter. Potter shot him a panicked look.
What the fuck are you doing?
Is it not obvious? Severus said, straightening. If you're so hell-bent on jumping, there's only one solution. I'll have to jump with you.
You're bloody mental, says the idiot who climbed up here in the first place, Severus said.
He gazed out at the moonlight-drenched vista, the dark shadows of the forbidden forest in the near distance. The night air was crisp, rustling through his robes. Had he not been so frightened, he might have found the experience exhilarating. Teetering on the edge always left one feeling more alive. He glanced down into the darkened courtyard.
"It's a long way down," he said. "At least 5, maybe 7 seconds before you'll hit the ground. You've fallen from your broom before, have you not, Potter? 7 seconds can feel like a lifetime when you're falling."
A breath. "I'm not scared," Potter said. "Of course not."
"You think it'll be warm," Severus said, "when you're there. You think it'll be dark, silent. The truth is, you don't know what it will be like. None of us do."
He glanced over just as Potter's eyebrows shut up.
"You're giving me the religious spiel? Really?"
Severus laughed.
"Hardly. I don't believe in anything."
Potter stared at him. In the darkness, his eyes were washed out. More gray than green.
"Potter," Severus said, "do you really want to die? Or do you maybe just want to stop being in pain?"
And just like that, the boy's face began to crumble. Severus stretched his hand out toward him and focused on not bloody swaying.
"Come down with me," he said. "Please."
Potter's fingers were sweat-damped and chilled, clammy. Severus gripped them as he had never gripped anything in his life before, and slowly, carefully, climbed backwards off the ledge. The moment both of his feet hit solid ground, he pulled Potter towards him, sharply. They tumbled to the floor in a flurry of robes. And there Severus was, shaking but safe, with a lapful of sobbing Gryffindor. It was as though the impact had shaken loose whatever tattered walls Potter had fashioned around himself to retain his composure, and ground them to dust, because he buried his face in Severus's robes and started crying in great, wrenching sobs which shuddered through him from top to toe. Severus lifted the arm which wasn't keeping him propped up, but it froze, hovering awkwardly several inches above Potter's back. Was touching acceptable, or would it be an unwelcome intrusion? What was he supposed to say, if, indeed, he was supposed to say anything at all? What the bloody fuck was the appropriate protocol here? He was, apparently, quite capable of talking somebody off a ledge, but this was a different matter altogether. Severus didn't do crying people. He never had done. In fact, he did his utmost to avoid them like the plague. Very few of the Slytherins ever burst into tears in his office, and on the rare occasion that one did, he simply pretended not to notice. He absolutely, categorically did not hug them. The only person Severus had ever held in his arms whilst they cried had been his mother, and he'd never known how to comfort her either. But when Potter's tears showed no sign of letting up any time soon, it became evident that something more was called for. With a hand as stiff as a board, he cautiously patted the boy's back a couple of times.
"There, there," he said.
Potter's next sob turned into a half-choked laugh, then another.
"God, you're crap at this, Snape," he muttered.
Severus tensed, then consciously forced himself to relax.
"I never once claimed to be the next Mother Teresa."
Perhaps it would be all right to allow his hand to rest on the boy's back. It didn't seem to be doing much harm.
"Sorry," Potter muttered against his ropes. "Didn't mean..." "This is fucking weird, you being..." He sniffed.
"Thought I was just a pint-sized celebrity to you and all."
"You're no longer pint-sized," Severus said without thinking. "At least standard cauldron size."
Potter choked out another laugh and promptly dissolved into a fresh fit of sobs. Mercifully, the second bout lasted not nearly as long as the first, although it still felt like eons until the violent convulsions that shook him became smoother beneath Severus's hand, until only a hitch in Potter's breathing remained.
"Sorry," he mumbled, detaching himself from Severus and shuffling away so that they were both still on the ground but no longer touching. "Got snot all over your robes."
Severus blinked. Bizarre how he'd not even noticed.
Potter sniffed again.
"Go on, then," he said, eyes firmly fixed to the ground. "Have at it. You must be dying to by now."
"Pardon?"
"Have a go at me. Tear me a new one. Tell me what a self-obsessed, vapid little freak I really am."
Severus stared at him, at Potter's hunched shoulders, at the defeat radiating from every line in his body, and could not find the slightest shred of anger within himself.
"That would be a touch uncharitable, given the circumstances, don't you think?" he said.
Potter glanced up, startled, and stared at him.
"Okay," he said eventually, "that's it. I'm definitely dreaming. This is all some kind of horrible nightmare." He buried his face in his hands, scrubbing at his eyes.
"Wake up," he muttered.
"Come on, wake up. Wake up."
"Stop that," Severus said. "I can assure you, Potter, this is decidedly real."
Potter fell still. He dropped his hands, back to gazing at the ground again, as though it was the most fascinating thing in existence.
"I don't suppose we could just pretend none of this ever happened," he said, very quietly.
Severus wished for nothing more fervently.
"Absolutely not," he said, allowing some of the usual steel to creep back into his voice. "I am nowhere close to being done with you."
Potter's shoulders slumped. Severus, cursing himself roundly for not planning this better, wondered what the fuck he was meant to do with him now. He was so ill-equipped to deal with this matter. Surely there had to be someone better. He rose to his feet.
"Up."
Potter shot a look at him, but failed to move.
"Where? Where are you taking me?"
"To your head of house, I should think. She will."
"Oh, God, no. No, no, please, no. You can't tell her. You can't."
So this was how mingled fear and shame looked on the boy. Severus enjoyed the sight far less than he might have anticipated. He hovered, curiously torn.
"You can't tell anyone," Potter said. "Please, please don't."
"I am not certain you appreciate the gravity of this situation," Severus said. "You attempted to take your own life. At the very least, the headmaster..."
He broke off as Potter buried his face against his knees.
"Not Dumbledore," he said, as though the very name was causing him pain. "He'd tell Sirius, and then I'd..." "Oh, God, I couldn't bear it. I'd die."
Severus sighed.
"Notwithstanding the beautiful irony of that statement, oh, Potter, no, I didn't..." "Don't cry."
"Not crying," Potter said. For fuck's sake, Severus was so the last person to be dealing with this.
He should throw the boy to Minerva and be done with it. He should cease playing at something he was not, and yet, this was his bloody fault in the first place. Ought he not be the one to fix it, then? Where before a gulf had gaped wide between him and Potter, now he could not seem to find the necessary distance. Could he truly rest easy and entrust a matter this delicate to Minerva, to Albus Sodding Dumbledore? And why was he perennially stuck between a blasted frying pan and a fire? For fuck's sake, he should know better by now.
"Very well," he snapped. "If I promise to hold off on involving others, I'm afraid, Potter, that you are regrettably stuck with me. You will come with me now, and you will tell me everything that led up to this debacle. You will listen to what I have to say. If you attempt to be duplicitous at any point in these proceedings, I shall know, and this deal will be off. Is that clear?"
When Potter nodded, Severus did not wait for him to rise of his own accord, grabbing his hand and pulling him up. He dragged him toward the stairs, stopping only briefly to pick Potter's cloak up on the way. No use in wasting resources. Thank the heavens for small mercies. At least he knew Snape was sleeping soundly in their quarters instead of being out on patrol. Once in his office, he bought himself time by brewing tea. Minerva had mentioned the strategy during the early years of his tenure at Hogwarts, and he'd adopted and stuck to it since. Even if students failed to cry, measuring out the loose leaves and bespelling the water to heat allowed him to retreat sufficiently to gain a sense of perspective. Unlike Minerva, he utterly refused to offer milk. The smoked, spicy blend he favored would suffer from it, and he was not about to start carrying a wider variety. His office was not a bloody catering establishment. Potter did not thank him when Severus set a cup for him on the desk. In fact, he did not move at all from where he had folded himself into a chair, legs pulled close to his chest. As positions went, it not only looked uncomfortable, but made Severus itch to tell him to sit straight. He restrained the urge.
"Well," he prompted, when Potter failed to speak, "I don't know where to start." "The beginning would seem advisable," Severus said, and took a sip of his tea.
Potter's mouth twisted. "I don't see the point. You just agree with everyone else. I'm the boy who lied. I made it all—"
"I most certainly did not make a statement to that effect."
"You said you'd know if I was being duplicitous," Potter said, eyes flashing momentarily toward Severus in a glare.
"Pretty much says it all, doesn't it?"
Severus sighed.
"I was referring to the quite natural disinclination you were liable to feel at the prospect of sharing your innermost thoughts with me, as opposed to your head of house. I believe I have made my thoughts on the vapidity of the media extremely clear in recent years. Even had I not, consider, for one moment, my actions after events earlier this year, and tell me, Potter, do I really believe that you were lying about what occurred?"
Potter cast his eyes down. "No."
"Perhaps the real question, then, is whether you believe what the newspapers say. Do you fear they may be right?"
A pause. "No," Potter said. "No, I'm quite clear on what happened." He was rubbing his thumb over the back of his right hand, staring at it, fixedly. Had it not been for the precision of the movement, Severus might have dismissed it as a nervous tic, but—
"Give me your hand."
"I—" Potter said, but Severus reached across the desk and caught his wrist before he could drop it in haste. The abruptness of the movement dislodged Potter from his preposterous position, forcing him to his feet, even as Severus pinned his hand against the wood. And there lay the letters, in faint traces of red. "I must not tell lies."
"Who did this?"
"I—" Potter said again, and then— "Umbridge, during detention. She made me write lines with this quill. You're angry."
"Of course I am angry,"
Severus said, ignoring how baffled the boy looked at this fact.
"Contrary to Filch's fevered daydreams of it being otherwise, we do not torture students at this school."
"Right." Potter tugged gently. When Severus let go of his hand, he sank back into his chair. "It wasn't that big a deal, really. I mean, I know I'm not lying, and it didn't even hurt all that much. I've had worse." "Crucio," Severus thought, quite unnecessarily. Potter stared at his hand. "I keep thinking she made me write the wrong thing," he said, very softly. "It should say, I must not get people killed, really." Ah, and there they were, right at the crux of the matter.
Potter, Severus said, you did not kill Cedric Diggory. The Dark Lord did.
Silence.
Potter, look at me.
He leaned forward, his eyes boring into green.
You are not to blame for his death.
Potter's gaze skittered away. I convinced him to take the cup. He didn't want to. He kept saying about how I should be the one to win, but I bloody well had to go and convince him to share, didn't I? If I hadn't...
You did not know the cup was a portkey.
Well, no, obviously not, but...
And if you had, would you have done the same?
No, he agreed, to the shake of Potter's head.
So how can you possibly carry any of the blame?
It's not just him, though. My parents died when you were an infant, Severus said through the shard of ice suddenly lodged in his throat.
You had even less agency then. Even if you'd known what was about to occur, you could not have prevented it. You possessed not even the words to warn them.
If I'd never been born, Potter said, they'd still be alive.
Perhaps. Perhaps not. Regardless, you were born. They made a choice to bring you into this world, and they made a choice to protect you. You did not ask for either of those, but you are here now, obliterating yourself from the face of the earth, understandably tempting though it might seem, will not reset the clock. It cannot bring back the dead. Not them, and not Diggory, either.
More silence.
That being said, the way you are feeling is not uncommon, as I understand it. Survivor's guilt, I believe they call it. You have seen and experienced things which nobody as young as you should ever have to see.
Curious how saying those words hurt, as though they rattled something deep inside him. Severus could not quite figure out why.
I keep dreaming of it, Potter said under his breath. All bloody summer, his eyes. Dudley kept taking the piss out of me because apparently I was screaming, but...
Your cousin? Severus said, startled.
Why would he...
Never mind, it's nothing. But he said it a little too quickly for Severus's taste.
Potter, he said in a warning tone.
Well, it's just, Potter said, glancing back up at him, that he's never liked me very much, all right? None of the Dursleys ever did. If it was up to them, I'd probably still be playing house elf to them most days and not even know I was a wizard. Severus stared.
What the hell did you think? Potter said a little heatedly. There's a bloody reason I'm pint-sized.
Somewhere beneath him, Severus could feel the foundations of myriad preconceptions crumble away into nothingness.
You're too blinded by hatred, Dumbledore's voice echoed inside him, and why did he always have to be right? How could he have failed to miss this? He had known Petunia. Of course the bloody bitch wouldn't honor Lily's memory as any decent human being might.
Cauldron-sized, he said, because he couldn't think of anything else to say.
Or at least nothing that wasn't utterly damning. Potter laughed, only to choke on the sound.
Thing is, I'm used to him ridiculing me, so it normally just goes in one ear and out the other, but this time, it was...
He broke off. Severus waited a moment.
Of course it was different, he said, when Potter failed to elaborate. The magnitude of the situation alone would make it so.
Potter began to shake his head, but turned it quickly into a nod, as though he'd thought better of it.
Yeah, he said. That's it.
You sound unconvinced.
No, I am. Convinced, I mean. It's just as you said. The magnitude of the situation made it harder to listen to, that's all.
Severus frowned and clamped down hard on a surge of impatience.
Potter, he said, how am I supposed to help you if you withhold crucial information from me?
Potter played with the hem of his sleeve. It's nothing, he mumbled. It's pathetic. I shouldn't even be...
Why don't you let me be the judge of that, hmm?
Oh, yeah, that's just what I need for you to...
Sorry, that's not fair. You've been surprisingly decent so far. It's really fucking bizarre.
I shall take that as a compliment, Severus said.
He paused, tapping his fingers against the grain of the desk.
Perhaps it would help if you began by telling me what precisely it was your cousin said.
He was going on about how I scream at night, how I talk in my sleep, you know, saying, well, I'm sure you can imagine, and...
Yes.
Potter paused for a long moment, his breathing shallow. When he next spoke, the words came out in a rush.
And he said, who's Cedric, your boyfriend?
He swallowed.
And the thing is, I mean, obviously he wasn't, but when he... I mean, I hadn't even thought, it's just that
I was so bloody confused all of last year. I kept thinking that I liked Cho, because everyone else was banging on about girls, and she's pretty, and plays Quidditch, and... Except I always just felt bloody awkward around her, and not in a good way at all. And Ron went all bonkers over Fleur, but I never even... She was just... But I kept thinking about Cedric, when I wasn't busy trying not to get killed in the tournament, that is, and in hindsight, I think I only liked Cho because I felt like I was supposed to like her, when I really liked Cedric instead, and I think I might be... gay. Severus blinked, mind still spinning from the rapidity of Potter's declaration. Go on, then, Potter said. Laugh. Tell me what a disgusting aberration I truly am.
That would be extremely hypocritical of me, Severus said, without thinking.
He wanted to unsay the words the moment they tripped past his lips. When Potter glanced up at him, wide-eyed, Severus straightened with a glare, wrapping the remaining shreds of his dignity around himself like a cloak.
I swear to Merlin, Potter, if I discover that you have shared any of the information I have revealed to you tonight, in confidence, with your little friends...
Yeah, Potter said, because that's bloody likely. They wouldn't believe a word I said. Severus cleared his throat and glanced off to the side. And how would I work it into a conversation with them, anyway? Oh, we were just chatting about why I decided it would be a brilliant idea to top myself, and it happened to come up amongst other things. He paused, and his next words came out much more quietly. Kill the spare, he said. Severus looked back just in time to see Potter brush a hand over his eyes.
Yes, he said, he would do.
Like Cedric was just some piece of rubbish to be chucked aside, like he didn't matter, and now he's dead, and I can't stop worrying about how I can't even be bloody normal when it comes to what my friends will think when they find out, and it seems so stupid and insignificant because he's dead, but I keep doing it anyway, and what sort of horrible person does that make me?
It makes you a teenager.
Potter's breath hitched. But it feels like I'm treating him just as horribly as Voldemort. Severus flinched, did. Like his death doesn't matter, because if it did, then I wouldn't be obsessing about, you know.
Potter, Severus said, watching another human being die is challenging enough. Questioning your sexuality can be unsettling in its own right, if on a very different level. Combine the two and, well, frankly, it's no wonder you're such a mess.
Thanks, muttered Potter.
Oh, don't. You know precisely what I intended to convey. My point is that you watched Diggory die. If you had feelings for him, which you didn't fully grasp at the time, of course you'd obsess about them. As for the rest, life doesn't simply stop because atrocities happen, regrettable though that might be.
Potter swallowed heavily. I miss him, he said.
Yes, Severus said.
A long silence fell. Then, what you said earlier, up on the tower, about having been there yourself. You were serious, weren't you? Severus tapped his index finger against the desk.
Did I sound like I was joking?
Potter fixed him with an unnerving stare. Why? I mean, why did you want to...
That's a rather personal question, Severus said.
But for some reason, the green eyes resting on his own compelled him not to leave it at that, even as his stomach filled with lead.
Suffice it to say that I, unlike you... had done certain things which made it a warranted response.
Potter's eyes flicked toward Severus's arm. You mean, while you were...
Cease prying, Potter, Severus said, not ungently. Now.
Potter fell silent, although the curiosity continued to bleed off him in waves. I'm still not convinced it wasn't my fault, he said after a beat.
One conversation will hardly eradicate something that complex. Give it time.
He studied the boy for a moment.
How do you feel now?
Exhausted. Like I need to think about this.
No irresistible urge to fling yourself off absurd heights or any such actions?
No, Potter said, meeting his eyes. Not right now, at any rate. Severus dipped into his mind just deeply enough to confirm that it wasn't a lie.
Good, he said. Should it return, you will come to me directly. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
As a matter of fact, you will see me again in this office, regardless. 7 p.m. tomorrow night, and every subsequent night, until I decide that it is no longer necessary. You may bring your homework. I believe I have heard several reports that indicate you have woefully neglected it of late."
Potter's mouth twisted.
"Understandable as your preoccupation may have been given the circumstances," Severus relented.
"No," Potter said, "that isn't it. It's just, it'll look a bit weird if I come to your office every bloody night, won't it? Ron and Hermione are bound to ask questions and..."
"Call it detention, then,"
Severus said, his lips quirking up at the corners in spite of himself.
"I caught you out after hours and decided to be particularly spiteful. I am making you polish every last jar in this room, individually and by hand."
"Right," Potter said. "This is still fucking weird. I don't get why you're doing any of this. Helping me. Being nice. Or fine, I have a couple of ideas, but I don't... Is it because..."
"I am doing this," Severus said, before Potter could embarrass them both. "Because, contrary to popular opinion, I am no monster."
"No," Potter said, looking thoroughly perplexed. "I guess you aren't." Perhaps the words should have stung, but as Severus watched Potter get to his feet and walk toward the door, he saw how tired confusion filled up the space of utter despair and could only feel a sharp sense of triumph. When his gaze caught on the silvery fabric piled on his desk, he stared at it for a moment, deliberating.
"You forgot something," he said, rising to his feet.
He picked up the cloak and walked over to Potter, who stared at him as though he had grown an accessory head.
"I trust you shan't use it for further ill-advised exploits."
"Right," Potter said a second time, taking it from his hands. For a long, drawn-out moment, he simply stared at Severus, as though he couldn't think of a single thing to say.
"I..." "Yes?"
Potter said. "Thanks?"
"Go to sleep," Severus said, and opened the door.
If somebody had told him 6 months ago that he would come to entertain Potter in his office for hours each night without once wanting to strangle him, Severus would have scoffed. If they had told him that a part of him would come to welcome the knock on the door at 7 sharp, he would have searched them for signs of a delusionment draught. If they had told him that Potter would come to trust him, he would have referred them straight on to St. Mungo's. Nevertheless, all of these happened over the following weeks. Each night Potter came, and each night he sat in the chair across from Severus's desk, spreading parchment and books out on his side. Sometimes he spoke of Cedric and nightmares and a graveyard at night, of being pinned to a tombstone and sliced open, of his desperate wish to be normal. Severus listened, and with each word he felt his anger recede one step further, as though poisonous vines unwound slowly from where they had lodged inside his spine.
"Normality is overrated," he said. "You are what you are."
Sometimes Potter cried, and although Severus felt the familiar surge of helplessness whenever he did, he found it increasingly easier, to not retreat into making tea, but to rest a cautious hand on the boy's shuddering back, to run tentative fingers over his hair. He knew rationally that the tears were for the best, but each time they appeared, he ached with it, long after Potter had left. Mostly, however, they simply sat in silence, Potter bent over his homework whilst Severus slashed red marks onto essays. On the fourth day, he was acutely aware of the moment that Potter's attention began to wander, but he did not remark on it, continuing with his work in spite of the creeping sensation of being watched. Potter always spoke up sooner rather than later, and Severus had found that giving him time to collect his thoughts meant he was less likely to snap. When 15 long minutes had slid past, however, he eventually looked up.
"Yes?"
"I was just wondering," said Potter, "what it is that you do for the Order."
"Ah, what do you think?"
"Well," Potter said, "everyone else seems to think that you're spying for us."
do they? Severus said, returning to his marking. What an intriguing theory.
That's exactly what a spy would say. Severus suppressed a smirk and corrected three atrocious misspellings of possessive pronouns. So, if you continued to treat me like rubbish in class, like today, Potter said, it's because Malfoy is watching and probably reports every bloody thing to his father, right?
If you say so, Severus said.
I've been thinking, Potter said the following day, after another long staring session, about how you've been telling me that I shouldn't blame myself for Cedric's death.
Yes.
And the thing is, I think I'm getting there, slowly. But the more I feel like I am, the more I keep thinking that you're telling me one thing, but really, when I run into trouble with it, you won't be able to tell me what it is I need to do. Severus blinked.
Pardon?
Potter hesitated for a moment, as though unsure whether to proceed. Because you don't practice what you preach, except maybe you should. Severus straightened and glared.
As I have already informed you, my circumstances differed vastly from your own.
Yeah, Potter said. I've been thinking about that, too.
Well, don't.
Too late. Because the thing is, whatever it is that you did, if you feel guilty enough about it that you want to top yourself, I reckon that in itself probably means you didn't deserve to die. Now, Volt,
do not say his name.
God, that really agitates you, doesn't it?
It's just a names hold power, Severus said, beyond that which we attach to them, irrespective of whatever claptrap the headmaster has been feeding you.
Potter frowned. Okay, he said. Anyway, my point is that he wouldn't even think of feeling remorse, and probably someone like Lucius Malfoy wouldn't either. But you do, or you wouldn't be doing what you're doing for the Order. You told me I'm nothing like him, but you obviously aren't either, or you wouldn't be helping me in the first place. So maybe you should try to forgive yourself, too. For several seconds, Severus could not find words through the bitter irony that clenched up in his insides. If only the boy knew, if only he knew, he would be the first one to cast the stone, and rightly, too. In a sudden flight of fancy, he wondered what it would be like if he confessed right here and right now, if he told Potter everything, whether the disgust on his face would shift some of the load. But no, he could not, would not obliterate whatever frail optimism he'd managed to plant against all reason in Potter's mind. He could not risk it.
You know nothing, he spat instead. You cannot fathom the things which I have done. You haven't the slightest inkling of the kind of person I truly am. So do us both a favor, Potter. Don't try. He picked up his quill. This discussion is over.
But it wasn't. Potter continued to watch him in silence for a while. Then, very softly, he said, You know, the more you keep telling me that, the more I trust you. That night, Severus drew out the aged, yellowing photo of Lily and stared at it until even the rough, torn-off edge began to blur. Then he threw it into the fire and watched it burn.
Hem, hem!
Severus suppressed a bright flare of anger and glanced up from the paperwork he'd been collecting, smoothing his features into blankness.
Yes?
A most regrettable circumstance has come to my attention,
said Umbridge, pressing her clipboard to her chest.
Indeed.
Yes, you see, Mr. Potter's continued efforts to fill my classroom with spurious lies erupted past the point of what is reasonable yet again today.
He does have a fevered imagination, it is true,
Severus said as sweetly as possible.
So you can imagine my displeasure when I attempted to discipline him by giving him detention, only for him to respond that he could not possibly attend it, as he is already in detention with you.
Very regrettable, I am sure, Severus said. However, I'm afraid that I have to confirm that for once he was not telling lies.
Umbridge's eyes narrowed.
You will understand, then, why I must ask you to release him so he can be punished appropriately by myself.
No, Severus said, I absolutely cannot do that.
The discipline in my classroom
is crucial, of course, Severus said, but so is it in mine. Unfortunate for you, though it may be, I got there first. Potter is in detention with me, and thus he shall be for the foreseeable future.
Umbridge's lips thinned.
Rest assured, Severus said, that he is not enjoying one second he spends with me. Ask around if you don't believe me. It is hardly a secret. There is no love lost between myself and the boy.
The lesson I intend to impart is one, I suspect, that I have been attempting to impart for years. Potter may have been defying you since the beginning of term, but he has defied me for much, much longer. So long, in fact, that I am determined to crush his willfulness once and for all, regardless of how many evenings I may have to sacrifice in order to do so. So you see, releasing him, if but for a night, into your capable hands is quite out of the question. It would render all my previous efforts null and void.
Why, Umbridge said, I have never...
Good day, Severus said, and swept out of the staff room.
You must not go to Umbridge, he said to Potter that night. It is dangerous folly.
Potter's gaze heated instantly. She's full of shit. You said so yourself.
Language, Severus said. And I believe I would remember using such colorful turns of phrase, had they made their way past my lips in your presence.
Oh, you know what I mean.
Severus studied the boy and his glare. I do, and it is precisely because of this that I have to warn you. You are already fully cognizant of the fact that she is a nasty piece of work. What you keep forgetting is that she is powerful also. Please, Potter, tread lightly.
She keeps bloody lying. She was saying that Quirrell was an excellent teacher. Don't you think that people deserve to know the truth?
I think, Severus said, that some truths are best left submerged until it is their time to surface.
To his relief, the boy actually appeared to contemplate his words.
You have been spending rather a lot of time with Harry of late, Dumbledore said. Is there anything I ought to be aware of?
Severus stirred his tea.
You told me some time ago that you had no wish to know of certain matters. This, I can assure you, you will wish to know least of all.
Dumbledore regarded him for a moment.
I only raise it because Minerva dropped in earlier. She is quite beside herself.
I'm aware. Minerva needs to mind her own business.
I hope you aren't being too hard on the boy. He has had a difficult year.
I'm extremely aware, Severus did not say.
I shall be as hard on him as I see fit. He looked up. I have it in hand.
Very well, Dumbledore said eventually. But at if any point in proceedings you find you no longer do,
I shall inform you directly, of course. Is that all?
Whom precisely he was protecting, he couldn't have said as he left the stone gargoyle in his wake moments later.
He did not inform Dumbledore, because in the end the thing that caused him to lose his grasp was not one he would ever have predicted. It meant none of the countless contingencies he had considered, most of which centered around the prospect of the Dark Lord discovering that Potter no longer viewed him with hatred. It blindsided him completely.
"I don't understand you," Potter said one evening.
"Good,"
Severus said, without interrupting his marking. "But I want to." Severus suppressed a sigh. Ever since the night which had led to the impulsive destruction of a priceless memento, an action he hadn't comprehended then and now deeply regretted, Potter had refrained from similar personal intrusions, seemingly content to keep his thoughts to himself. Severus should have known better than to assume it would last. He briefly debated whether it would be worth it to speak up and draw a line in the sand, but frankly, he didn't want the hassle. He'd had an exhausting day following on from a far more exhausting night with precious little sleep and too much time spent kowtowing to duel masters. If Potter decided to be spirited, Severus was only going to snap and hurt the boy's feelings. Ignoring him should do the trick just as nicely.
You're like one giant contradiction, Severus kept writing, except maybe they're not contradictions at all. I just haven't figured out yet how they make sense. I think maybe you haven't either, Severus wrote faster, because you keep saying one thing and doing another. You tell me I need to forgive myself, but you refuse to do the same.
You tell me not to cross Umbridge, but you didn't hand me over to her for detention when I know that's what she wanted. You told me, up there on the tower, that you don't believe in anything. But if that were true, then nothing would matter to you. And you hide it pretty bloody well, but that's obviously a lie, because you wouldn't have spent all this time making sure I was okay otherwise. I think maybe you're just shit scared of admitting what you do believe in, because it doesn't fit with how you see yourself. But you're wrong, you know. You're not nearly as horrible as you pretend to be. The quill was plucked from Severus's hand, and he startled. He'd been so intent on ignoring Potter that he'd utterly failed to notice him getting up and moving around the desk. He seemed, suddenly, very close. "Potter," he said, "what are you—" and Potter kissed him. It was shock that froze Severus. Shock and surprise and momentary terror. Yes, that was categorically it. It had nothing to do whatsoever with how soft Potter's lips were against his own, nor with the slick slide of his tongue into Severus's mouth, how it brushed over his palate tentatively, then insistent. It had nothing, nothing to do with how Potter's words had scraped him raw, leaving him grasping, desperate for touch. Nothing at all with the fact that he could not recall being kissed with such aching sincerity in his life. It did not feel warm and gentle as rain, was not, could never have been a benediction. When his hand slid into Potter's hair, it was only to pull him away, not with an aim to feel the silk of it run through his fingers. Severus would never, ever have touched him for pleasure. The boy was only a— He thrust Potter away sharply and leapt to his feet, horrified. "What the hell do you think you are doing?" he yelled. Potter stared at him from where he had slammed into the shelf, broken jars and glass bottles littered around his feet. He was breathing heavily. Behind his glasses, the blacks of his pupils swallowed the green. He licked his lips, and Severus's eyes tracked the movement, helplessly. "I thought that was obvious. I was—" "And what could possibly have possessed you to think that such a thing would be remotely acceptable, let alone that I would ever, in a million years, welcome such wildly inappropriate advances from a student? Have you completely lost your mind? No, don't answer that. It's self-evident that you have. Congratulations, Potter. You've outdone even yourself. You've gone so far beyond the pale this time that I—" "Hey," Potter said, "that's not fair. I admit it was a long shot, but you did kiss me back."
"I most certainly did not,"
Potter's eyes flashed. "Right, so I just imagined your tongue in my mouth then, did I?"
"Yes," Severus snarled. "I would never—" "How dare you imply that I would—" "I would never touch a child. You are 15 years old. I am 35. Not to mention your teacher. And if you weren't so confused, you would—"
"I'm not bloody confused, either."
"You clearly are, if you are throwing yourself at a man over twice your age and fail to see the wrongness in that. If you had any sense of perspective, you'd realize that you should go and bloody well find a suitable boy close to your age, like any normal teenager."
He realized his mistake the instant the treacherous word had slipped past his lips, but by then it was too late. "Right," Potter said, with a grim sort of satisfaction. "Normal. The kind of normal you told me I'd likely have to accept I'd never have?"
"That was never what I intended to—"
"You're right. I'm 15. But honestly, how many 15-year-olds do you know who have faced the Dark Lord 3 bloody times, starting from when they were 11? Who've watched someone die because of them? Who've been cursed and crucioed, and whose blood has been used to revive the person who killed their bloody parents? Who constantly have every last bloody detail of their lives splashed across all the papers, until they got so sick of all of this shit, that they wondered if they might not be better off—"
"All the more reason why this is a terrible idea. Not only are you confused, but you're vulnerable, too. And the last thing you need—
I need you. Don't you get it? Nobody my age could possibly understand me, but you do. And you have no idea, none at all, what that's been like. To know someone cares about me and gets me at the same time—" Severus took a deep breath.
"You've confused pity with affection, Potter, and I assure you that they are quite different things."
"Fuck you," Potter said. There were tears in his eyes. "Don't you dare do this. Don't you treat me like I'm some sort of idiot who can't tell when you're lying. Speaking of which, you still haven't explained why, if this is all so wrong, you kissed me back." I already told you, and that's another lie! Potter pushed away from the shelf, stalking towards him. Severus quickly took several steps back, nearly stumbling over his chair in the process. You kissed me, and you enjoyed it. You just don't want to admit it. Another step, and Severus's back met the wall, Potter crowding in on him, lifting his chin. And if I kissed you right now, you'd do it again.
No,
Severus said, but he suddenly felt far from convinced. This close, he could feel the heat of Potter's body where it pressed against him, could smell the musk of his skin. His pulse hammered away in his throat, dizzying him. Who was he to say that it was anger or fear which had set it to racing, that it wasn't something despicably darker which caused his insides to flutter? What, for that matter, had he to fear, if not himself? Potter hardly presented a physical challenge of any kind, and yet here Severus was, backed into a corner as though he were the child, incapable of even grabbing the boy by the arm to throw him out of the door, because what if his hands chose to betray him and pull him closer instead? They'd done it once. How was he to trust that they wouldn't do it again? He pressed them against the wall until his arms trembled with the strain. Get away from me! He said, throwing every fiber of his being into the words. Get out, Potter! Now! Why? Because, Severus snarled, I don't want you here! Potter held his eyes for a long moment, and then, mercifully, mercifully, stepped away and around the desk. He picked up his books and thrust them into his bag, flinging it over his shoulder. Severus stared at him all the while, transfixed, and watched him walk towards the door. Just before it, Potter stopped, then turned. His face was filled with the stubbornness Severus was so used to seeing there, but never before had it terrified him so, with a possible exception of that night on the astronomy tower. We're not done, Potter said. I know what you're doing. You're just pushing me away because you're afraid, because I got too close, because you don't think you deserve this. But you're wrong, and I won't let you. I'll make you see that. So don't you dare think we're done. And he stepped through the door. The snick of the lock brought no relief. Severus peeled himself away from the wall, but he could not sit down despite his legs seemingly having turned into liquid. His thoughts were racing too fast. He leaned heavily on the desk instead, bracing himself with both arms, trying to breathe. He felt sick to the stomach, nauseous, his skin crawling all over as if he might... A fluke, that's all it had been. Some terrible, horrible nightmare that would soon be forgotten. Potter would go away, and he'd calm down, and then he'd see it, too. He'd come to his senses, come to be thoroughly disgusted with his actions. He'd be embarrassed, and they'd never mention it again, and all would be... Severus's nails dug into the wood. For fuck's sake, who was he kidding? This was Potter. The boy would try and walk through stone walls just because he decided on the spur of the moment that it was a good idea. Once he'd dug his teeth into some madcap plan, he was like a rabid dog that refused to let go. And how could Severus have failed to predict that this would happen? How could he possibly have been so blind? Of course he'd attached to Severus like a bloody limpet. He was depressed and lonely and confused. So of course he'd mistake comfort for something more, no matter what the truth. He swallowed heavily. That was all he'd ever intended to offer, all he'd been aiming for, right? Right? He was sure of it. He was 100% certain, and yet, he had kissed Potter back. He could deny it no longer, could still feel the imprint of Potter's teeth against his tongue, as though they had left behind venomous spikes. His mouth tasted acrid, his throat full of bile. A fluke, surely, at least this part. It had to have been. He hadn't been prepared for the shock to his senses, but now that he was, things would be different. He could, he would, he could reject Potter when he tried again. He wasn't a monster. He wasn't this weak, was he? His mind helplessly flashed to an image of Potter stealing his way into his quarters and inside his bed under cover of night, of bare, coltish limbs twining around him as Potter whispered, I trust you.
with all the convictions Severus had never been granted, not even by Dumbledore, and something clenched sharply inside him, even as he recoiled in horror. No. No, 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 he could not let this happen. But he couldn't trust himself around the boy either, because he was precisely that weak. Only he could possibly stoop this low. This was all his fault in the first place. If he'd never made the godforsaken mistake of letting slip his inclinations during that first night in his office, Potter would never have had cause to fixate on him so. He had to undo it. Better yet, he had to obliterate the chance that Potter could develop such feelings in future. The remotest risk was too great to take. Potter could not grow to like him, nor could he be allowed to retain purely sexual urges that might encompass him in future. Severus's fingers already clenched around metal as he sped from his office and towards the nearest concealed alcove. There, he spun the time-turner further than he had done before, so close, too close, to its very limits, back to that disastrous first night. He caught Potter in the corridor, mere moments after he'd left Snape's office. The boy blinked, clearly confused, eyes flicking quickly from Severus toward the door and back. "What?" he said. "But you were just..." Severus lifted his wand. "Obliviate." As with any complex spell, there were layers to its execution. One could completely strip someone of memories, tear them away, and leave behind only a hole, as Severus suspected had been Lockhart's favorite application of the charm. But one could equally suppress them, tuck them away in some quiet corner of the subconscious to slumber there indefinitely, until equally strong magic awoke them. And this was what he did now. He shoved it all down to the furthest recesses of Potter's mind, the memory of the tower and the immediate feelings which led up to it, their conversation in his office, which would hopefully work on a subliminal level to balance out what guilt did remain. And yes, this too. Any recollection the boy ever had of favoring his own gender, he locked down so tightly that should the concept arise anew, he would dismiss it quickly. He was tucking away his wand as Potter blinked again. When his eyes cleared and refocused on Severus, they did so in a glare.
30 points from Gryffindor.
What? But I was only
out after curfew, again. Would you care to make it 50? Because you will, if you don't instantly return to your dormitory where you should be.
As he watched the boy disappear down the dark corridor, every part of him felt curiously heavy, as though his very bones were lined with lead. He did not feel guilty. He did not. He told himself this as he watched Potter during mealtimes and whilst needling him in class. He had only done what was necessary. Had Potter been allowed to retain the memory of his feelings for Cedric, Severus doubted that any memory charm would have been capable of repressing the urgency of his despair, even with the subconscious imprint of their conversation as a counterweight. The boy would only have killed himself again, and Severus would have been right back at the start, left to choose between the unacceptable and the impossible, entrusting Minerva and Dumbledore with more than they could handle, or trusting himself. He was only acting in Potter's best interests. He would find some girl eventually and come to be content, if not happy, so long as he didn't know what he was missing. Much, much better than the alternative, that the worst sort of fate Potter could possibly meet, of Severus smearing his filth all over his innocence. He did not feel guilty. He didn't. The spell held, as did Potter's sanity, despite another full week of detention with Umbridge. Hard as Severus tried to bury himself in work on those nights, he could not banish the faint sound of Potter's quill scratching against paper which seemed to echo through his office, lingering from the weeks Potter had spent there doing his homework. Severus did not feel sad, either, when he recalled it. Angry with Umbridge, yes. This he could allow. Potter resumed Quidditch, and life returned to normal, which, in Severus' world, equated to absurd.
"Sir!" Lovegood shouted at him across the courtyard in early October. "Harry, he's been killed."
"How?"
"It was a heliopath."
"Don't be absurd," Severus snapped. "There's no such thing as heliopaths."
10 minutes later,
As he stared at the pile of ashes, having confirmed that they were indeed Potter's remains, he was still convinced that there had to be a reasonable explanation. "It came through there, see?" Lovegood said, pointing toward the trail of dead grass that stretched far into the distance. "I saw it. It was like a great big ball of flame, galloping right towards him." She gazed at the ashes with a somber expression. "It would have been quite beautiful," she said softly, "if it hadn't burnt him alive, you know." Severus opened his mouth and then closed it again. What could one possibly say to that? "Heliopaths exist," he wrote in his diary later, "can be corralled inside a ring of water and then banished to the center of the earth where, presumably, they belong. Ensure the Dark Lord never finds out about them." Less than a week later, Lovegood found him once more, although this time she was merely part of a whole gaggle of overwrought, hysterical students. In the end, Severus needed to shoot warning sparks into the air to get them sufficiently quiet to extract what had happened.
"He was what?"
"Teaching us defense," Granger said, "because Umbridge won't... Oh God, I knew this was a terrible idea."
"I should think so. And it was Longbottom." He pointed a finger at the quivering, sobbing boy. "Who killed him?"
"Well, not deliberately," Granger said. "It was an accident. I think Harry disarmed him. Isn't that right, Neville? And his wand collided with the ceiling and broke apart. And then Harry... Oh, God, Harry."
"Yes?"
"He got hit, and it was awful."
For fuck's sake, why could Potter not bloody well leave him alone? Was it not enough that he sat sulking in Severus's class whilst Umbridge stuck her nose where she didn't belong, when Severus couldn't even be certain if his outrage was, in part, on behalf of the boy? Was it not enough that Severus was forced to see him at meals and in the corridors? Did he really have to go straight back to dying repeatedly without granting Severus a single moment of reprieve?
"And where," he snarled so viciously that Granger recoiled as he stepped toward her, "did you hold this spectacularly ill-advised little session?"
He should disband Potter's makeshift army instantly, he thought, after the Room of Requirement had made his job remarkably easy by providing an invisible alcove for him from which he could slow down Longbottom's wand so it landed harmlessly on a bookshelf. He should report it to Umbridge himself and see it squashed, except... it might give Potter a purpose. He might not recall what Cedric had meant to him, but he still remembered the graveyard, the ritual, the terror of facing the Dark Lord at full strength, and being able to teach others to defend themselves, however ineptly, might lend some meaning to an experience which truly had none. Severus did nothing. Guilt, of course, did not factor into that decision. Not at all. November brought the first Quidditch match of the season, and with it another chance for Potter to die. That it was one of his Slytherins who caused him to expire was aggravating, if hardly surprising. Crabbe had been a loose cannon from the moment he arrived. As Severus huddled beneath the stands, firing off a cushioning charm at just the right moment to soften the impact of the bludger so it could not crack Potter's spine clean in two, he cursed the constraints that his position within the Dark Lord's circle conferred upon him. Without the need to remain on good terms with Crabbe Sr., he could have come down hard on the boy for endangering another student, and right now he wished for nothing more. Well, other than, perhaps, that Potter might choose to abandon Quidditch altogether. But that was a pipe dream. As it turned out, there was a god. It certainly moved in mysterious ways, too, because Severus would never have predicted that Potter getting into a fist fight would further his goals, nor would he have imagined that the deity he refused to believe in would choose to be represented by Umbridge of all possible people. But when he overheard Minerva crossly informing Flitwick of how the new High Inquisitor had effectively banned Potter from Quidditch for the entire year, it was probably a good thing that neither of them glanced over to see him folding his hands as he raised his eyes skyward with a smile. He probably looked completely deranged.
"Bitten by a Thestral," he wrote later that month, "which carried a particularly virulent strain of heart-wasting sickness that St. Mungo's could not cure."
How did Potter manage to do these things?
Thestrals were the gentlest, kindest creatures one could find, despite their undeserved reputation. So much so, in fact, that Severus resented feeding the herd a calming draught quite on principle. And why, out of all magical maladies, did it have to be heart-wasting sickness? It was almost as though Potter was trying to send him subliminal messages by catching the one disease that would have him lying in a hospital bed, sobbing nonstop, that was literally causing him to die out of conviction that nobody loved him. "Accidentally swallowed mistletoe," he wrote in December, and felt all the more paranoid. Stop, stop, stop. Why couldn't it all just bloody well stop?
"No. I'm afraid it was not a request," Dumbledore said, gazing at him solemnly, "but an order."
"I don't care. You cannot ask this of me. It's too much. I categorically—"
"Severus, please. Sit down."
Severus stared at Dumbledore across his desk, hot chills racing up and down his spine.
"No, thank you," he said. "I much prefer to stand."
Dumbledore sighed.
"It does not concern you in the slightest, then, that Voldemort appears to have access to Harry's mind?"
"I never said that. I merely stated that I could not be the one to—"
"He must learn occlumency. On this, at least, we are in agreement, are we not?"
"Then you teach him. You are equally qualified, if not more—"
"No," Dumbledore said, shaking his head. "You did not see the boy when he told me of his dream of the snake. The moment I so much as glanced at him, I could see the hatred in his eyes. Voldemort's hatred, that is. Now that he is aware of the link, he would use it to get to me as soon as I was alone with Harry, and we cannot chance that. I know too much. We cannot risk what information I possess falling into his hands."
"And what," Severus said, "of the risk to me? What shall I do when the Dark Lord finds out that I am teaching Potter how to hold him at bay? That I am undermining his plans? That I am defying—"
"You shall tell him that I ordered it so, of course," Dumbledore said, "and perhaps that you are not teaching him very well."
"A marvelous suggestion, which will work up to the point that I am successful."
"Let us cross that bridge when we come to it, yes?" Dumbledore said. "Severus, you know that I would never endanger your—"
Severus laughed.
"I would not," Dumbledore said, with a stern gaze over the rim of his spectacles. "Not at this stage of the game, certainly. You are no use to me dead, and you know that. Should it become necessary, we shall have to pull you out and—"
"Because a spy who cannot spy is so tremendously useful."
"A spy who cannot spy," Dumbledore said, "is, in this case, still a brilliant tactician, someone with insight into our enemy which we otherwise lack. Someone who can predict enough of their actions to guide us, and whose magical ability would prove an immense asset on the battlefield when it comes to that. Not to mention a person whom I value and consider a friend."
"How touching," Severus said. "You had better get straight on to writing my epitaph, then, if you value me so much, as I predict I shall require it in the immediate future, disregarding everything else, if the boy breaks into my mind during these sessions."
"I do not think that very likely," Dumbledore said. "Do you?"
And what could Severus possibly say to that, when he knew it to be not only likely, but an inevitability? When he knew that he lay flayed open before Potter, should he only care to try and turn the tables, that the boy would sink into him as though his defenses were water? For a split second, he considered confessing the dreadful miscalculation he had made the previous year, the price he thought he'd been willing to pay for Potter's resistance to Imperius. It suddenly seemed so much steeper, so much dearer a cost.
"Of course not," he said.
"There is always the pensive as well," Dumbledore said. "You are aware of the variant of the spell to extract memories completely?"
Reluctantly, Severus nodded.
"Then I'm afraid we've reached the end of this discussion. Harry is spending the remainder of the holidays at Grimald Place, and I expect you to visit there in due course to inform him of the purpose of these lessons. Start as soon as is feasible. First day of term."
"Hello, Potter. Why am I here? Oh, merely to inform you that the headmaster has ordered me to rape your mind on a regular basis come the beginning of term. Merry belated Christmas, and a very happy new year."
No, perhaps not. He could not recall a conversation he had looked forward to less, and he had plenty to choose from. that Black insisted on intruding only made the experience more delightful. Delightful, of course, in a world where Black equaled White and White equaled Black. Except that Black himself was about as far removed from the bright side of the spectrum as was possible. He was as much of a stain as ink splotches on blank parchment, every bit as dirty as coal smeared all over a miner's hands. Severus had not thought it feasible that he could hate him more, but his newfound understanding of Potter brought insight which made it so. Suddenly, the way Black looked at Potter took on a very different tone.
"But surely you have noticed that Potter is very like his father," Severus said, and yes, partially it was with the intention to rile. But it was also a test, one which Black failed spectacularly the moment he said, "Yes, I have." Potter was nothing like his father, as Black should have known, and if Severus called the boy arrogant a split second later, which he knew to be an untruth, well, he needed to provoke Black into starting a fight, did he not? Far easier that way to castrate him accidentally, to ensure that even if Black chose to confuse Potter for his father in the worst sort of way, there would be no consequence. Bloody Weasleys, always interrupting at the worst possible time. Severus left for Hogwarts, and as much as he dreaded the start of occlumency lessons, they could not come soon enough now. Raping Potter's mind had to be preferable to leaving Potter alone with Black in that house. Depositing a memory into a pensive did not, contrary to popular belief, remove it from consciousness altogether. It weakened its impact, certainly, siphoning off some of the intensity of emotion directly attached to it, but one did not forget the event. It simply receded into the background, a grayscale photograph replacing a full-color, gloss-bright print. Any decent legilimens could still find those imprints, and whilst Potter wasn't one, the risk of him stumbling into the recesses of Severus's mind, however briefly, was too great. If he caught so much as a glimpse of the time-turner, or worse, of himself, dead. And so, as Severus prepared for the first lesson, he used the variant of the spell Dumbledore had referred to. It was usually ill-advised, not because it took far more time and energy to cast, not because it hurt and was borderline illegal, but because it inevitably changed you. He sat and tore memory after memory from his mind, ripping them clean out without a shred left behind until they swirled in ebony tendrils at the bottom of the stone basin. Then he read the note which he had written himself prior to starting. "You cannot take many more completely," it said. 5, 10 at the most, or you'll lose yourself. Choose wisely."
It made little sense. Why should he feel compelled to remove memories in their entirety in the first place? He did not fear Potter breaking into his mind. The brat was weak and unskilled, utterly useless. No, the usual method would quite suffice. Besides, lose yourself? Really? He laughed. He felt no different. There were no holes, not even gaps in his mind. Whatever he'd chosen to temporarily cast aside, it couldn't have been that important. He waited for Potter in the shadows, watching him arrive. Every bit like his father, the way that he swaggered into Severus's office, glancing about with such sullen arrogance, looking for places to stick his nose, no doubt, not even bothering to close the door. Oh, how Severus despised him. Still, he could not seem to recall why he had objected to these sessions so strongly. Certainly, any moment spent in Potter's company was a trial and a waste of time, but there could be pleasure in this. He would show no mercy. He would rip into the boy's mind so he could learn to defend it, and if the process hurt, all the better for it.
"Shut the door behind you, Potter," he said coldly.
Naturally, the first lesson was an abject failure. In the wake of Potter's departure, however, Severus chose not to focus on that. Instead, he sat for a while, basking in the lingering afterglow of Potter's cries of pain, of the sight of him on his knees, so pathetically weak. Then he scooped up his memories from the pensive. That Wednesday, he wrote himself a different note.
"Do not, under any circumstances, remove any further memories completely. You're risking your life."
A lie, but a necessary one. The most crucial one, if he was truthful. After all, what would he be without even the shadow of Lily? What would he become if this was what he had been for so long, without noticing? He'd sooner expose himself to Potter than find out. He could not contemplate the thought. He could not, would not. He refused to go there.
Legilimens!
A maelstrom of two rapid images spinning before his eyes, the sorting hat whispering in Slytherin, that Chang girl leaning in, eyes wet and wide, a fat boy, laughing, Dementors approaching, Potter humiliated again and again and again. Sweet revenge, tinged with anger, the brat wasn't bloody well trying. Legilimens! Potter's mind tearing beneath his touch like parchment, the fences flimsy as organza, soft as feathers. Pathetic. Potter screamed in agony, crashing to the floor. Quite delightful. Potter on all fours, glaring at Severus with such hatred from Lily's eyes, willfulness made incarnate. You're not telling me how, ingrate. Legilimens! Then the unexpected. His memories now, flashes straight from the recesses of his mind. His father, isolation, a laughingstock, that's all he... Protego ought not to have done that. A fluke, surely, an accident propelled by Potter's despicable luck. But once it had started, it kept happening, Potter spilling into his mind as if riding the slipstream of Severus's power, and each time it got harder to thrust him back out, to pull innocuous enough recollections to the foreground. How dare he? Potter possessed not a scrap of talent and certainly no dedication to practice as he bloody well ought. He could not even hold at bay the damnable corridor he saw at night. And yet, here he was, week in and week out, skipping through impeccable walls that had kept the Dark Lord himself out, when it should not have been possible. Outrageous. Severus redoubled his efforts, forcing himself into Potter's mind with all the harshness he could find, ensuring he felt the jagged edge of each penetration like the vicious slash of a knife. He reveled in the wound that remained, gaping and dripping, long after Potter had left. It was the one thing he could revel in, and it would have to suffice. Every Monday and Wednesday night, he tore empathy and compassion from himself with his wand, and then tore them from Potter with his cruelty. Every Monday and Wednesday night, after Potter departed, he drank his memories back down, swallowed who he had become and the twisted mirror of who he could have been. Then he sat, staring at the pensive for a second, for hours. He did not weep, knowing deep down that if he started, he'd never be able to stop. And in between, in sterile, mechanical lines of quill against paper, exploded by a Weasley firework, accident during DA meeting, painting frame fell on his head, dead. Potter dying was no longer an obsession. It had become an afterthought. I hate you, Potter snarled and slammed Severus against the wall. In the dark, cramped cavern of his office, all Severus could see were his eyes, green, 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 flashing like lightning. He opened his mouth to say, good, but what emerged was a sharp laugh. Derisive, and Potter's face twisted as he flew at Severus, punching and kicking, scratching and biting. Severus shoved him away, and away, and away, except there was nowhere to shove him to. The walls hemmed them in on all sides, as though they were stuck in some cupboard he should really recall, but he could not think through the litany of I hate you, I hate you, I hate you, through the thundering roar of his blood. He could not seem to evade Potter's grasp, the fingers which clawed at his robes and slid through them like water, digging like talons into his heart. He fought back, frantic, backhanded Potter so hard that his head met the wall with a crack. Stop it, he said, still mere inches away. Stop it! Stop it! Just stop it! Potter smiled, wiping blood off his lip with the back of his hand. Why, he said, you hate me too, don't you? And he grabbed Severus by the neck, jerking him forward and down until their lips met. It wasn't a kiss so much as a bite, but that didn't matter, because suddenly everything else ceased to exist, and Severus knew only the voracious heat of Potter's mouth, the blade of his tongue as it sliced over his own, the thick taste of burnt pennies filling his throat. Suddenly, there was only the need cresting inside him like a wave, like a tsunami. The need to possess him, to have him, to own him, to sink inside him and never come back. He grabbed Potter's hair and fucked his mouth with his tongue, pulling him closer, feeling him hard through layers of fabric. He swallowed a moan which might have been Potter's or his own. Suddenly, it was him clawing at Potter's robes, but there were no robes. They were naked. So Severus grabbed him by the hips and hoisted him against the wall and pushed home in one perfect, slick slide which shot lightning all the way up his spine. Potter's head fell back on a gasp, and Severus watched the sweet line of his throat, transfixed even as she shot upwards, deep inside him, then again. It was all he wanted now, the rhythm, the push and pull, but it wasn't enough, because on every thrust Potter rasped, "I hate you," like a mantra, like a punctuation mark. Severus fucked him harder and harder still, nails digging into the soft flesh of Potter's hips, but he would not be quiet no matter how harshly Severus forced him down on his cock. "Shut up," he thought, and bit down on the juncture of Potter's neck with a snarl, tasting sinew and muscle, blood, bone, and marrow. Potter sighed, clenching tightly around him. Then his fingers feathered softly down Severus's spine. His lips brushed like silk over the shell of his ear as he whispered, "I trust you." Severus lowered him gently onto the sheets of his bed, surging inside him, falling and falling as he came helplessly, and he woke up from his own moan, still shuddering through the aftershocks of his orgasm. For a moment, he lay shivering beneath the covers, but there was no afterglow, only sick horror clenching his guts into knots, forcing him to move a heartbeat later. He ripped off his sticky nightshirt on the way to the bathroom and headed straight for the shower. But no matter how long he stood under the scalding spray, no matter how hard he tried to scrub the dream out of his skin, he just wouldn't feel clean. It was unacceptable, of course. It was vile that his body should choose to betray him so. Even in sleep, he could not countenance it. It was not to be borne. But he had woken too late in the night, or too early in the morning, depending on how one looked at it, to have sufficient time to do what was necessary to put a stop to this. He had to wait until later to solve this problem once and for all. All day his fingers twitched with the urge. He was restless enough to snap at two Slytherins in his NEWT-level classes, but by the time they stopped blinking in confusion, his mind had already wandered away from the perceived slight in their work. Because worse was yet to come, today's lessons featured a certain fifth-year class. He did his utmost to avoid glancing at Potter. He did. But his eyes refused to obey him, sliding toward him as though gravity itself compelled them, measuring the line of his jaw and how much more angular it had become. Potter looked up, glaring at him, and it was all Severus could do not to instantly break eye contact, but glare back at him in kind. By the time Potter bent back over his potion, he felt hot, his skin prickling all over. It kept happening. At one point, Potter stretched to grab a jar off the shelf behind him, tilting his head back and sideways, exposing the column of his throat. Severus stared at the milky white expanse of skin, such a pitch-perfect reproduction of the vision from his dream, and his stomach churned. He felt it roiling, trickling warm sparks lower, lower. No. He spun on his heel, dug his nail into his palm. He would not permit this. This sickness. This disease. His mouth tasted metal, as though it were still full of Potter's blood. Not that it ever had been, of course. It had been a dream, some feverishly twisted nightmare, never fantasy. His response was automatic, merely a flashback, and yet what was equally concerning was how accurate a replica Potter's neck had been in his dream, when surely it should have been as twisted as well, morphed far from reality. He hadn't been studying the boy that closely before, had he? He hadn't. He certainly hadn't regarded him with the intent to commit the lines of his body to his mind to pursue at leisure later. Nevertheless, even with his back turned on him, with his eyes closed, he could picture him so clearly, too clearly, could draw the bow of his mouth, the... No lesson in his lifetime had passed this slowly. As soon as it let out, he fled to his private laboratory, where he brewed the strongest lush-dampening potion he knew of, and tipped it down his throat still hot, burning his tongue. He was better off without a libido, anyway. What bloody use would it ever be to someone like him? He continued to dream of Potter. He dreamt of struggling with him, fighting him without wands. He dreamt of accidentally killing him with his bare hands. When he reached for the time-turner, it was nowhere to be found. Some nights he dreamt of them lying side by side on his bed, fully clothed, of Potter raining chaste kisses on his eyelids, his forehead, his temples. Whenever Severus reached out to return the favor, Potter vanished like curls of smoke. Dreamless sleep had a deleterious effect on the lust-dampening potion. He would just have to bear it. Having fun? He tore Potter out of the pensive, incandescent with rage. How dare he? How dare he invade his privacy like this, the moment Severus's back was turned? So, he said, digging his fingers into Potter's arm, knowing, hoping it hurt. So, been enjoying yourself, Potter? The boy's lips were moving, but through the roaring of blood in his ears, sound failed to register. Not that he needed an answer. Of course Potter had been enjoying himself. He'd probably got off on it, just like his amusing man, your father, wasn't he? He snarled, shaking and shaking and shaking the brat, but it wasn't enough. He wanted to rip him apart, tear off his limbs, to strangle him, right here and... He shoved the boy to the floor. You will not repeat what you saw to anybody! No, Potter gasped, but Severus didn't hear more, because his wand hand was twitching, his mind suddenly full of spells. Sectum Sempra, yes, Crucio, even better, or perhaps something rawer, more animalistic. He felt it rising inside of him already, thrumming, building to a crush. Get out! Get out! I don't want to see you in this office ever again! Potter fled the moment he lost control of his magic, shattering a jar of cockroaches over his head. The door shut, and the whole wall exploded, blasting Severus with a shower of bright shards. The shock of fragments of glass hitting him in the face was the only thing that kept him from chasing after the boy to do him serious violence. The only thing. Time did little to calm him down. An hour later, he stood over the pensive, having reassembled what was salvageable, but mostly discarded years' worth of ruined, painstaking work. So help him, Merlin, but if Potter ever darkened his doorstep again. He rejoined with the memories, and the burning of his blood instantly turned to ice. Certainly, Potter had invaded his memories, but Severus doubted it had been with calculated, malicious intent. Utter stupidity seemed far more likely, combined with that blasted, curious streak of his. He did not feel angry, so much as betrayed. Darkly, bitterly betrayed, which was utterly ludicrous, because he had sown the seeds for this, had he not? First he had annihilated the connection Potter had shared with him, if with good reason. Then he had stamped out whatever frail respect the boy may have held in him by deliberately causing him pain and delighting in his most private humiliations. Why on earth should Potter not feel compelled to do the same? But even that didn't ring true somehow. He closed his eyes and recalled Potter's face as Severus found him in the pensive, and he could see it now that he was looking through a different lens. Potter had not been having fun. He'd been appalled. At that moment, Potter hated him with every fiber of his being, and still, he'd been appalled, simply because he'd been in the same position, and he knew how it... Gryffindor righteousness, Severus muttered, but the words tasted bitter on his lips, distorted. He shook his head. All of this was beside the point. Potter needed to learn occlumency, and Severus knew that. But he was stuck. He still could not teach him with all of his memories fully intact, because Potter might see them, and where would he be then? Sweet mercy that out of all the memories Potter could have dived into, it had been that one, or Severus could be dealing with far greater damage. No, he could not teach him like this, but he didn't trust himself, that other him, either. He didn't trust him to agree to resume lessons simply because Severus insisted on it through a note after ordering Potter back to his office. Truth be told, he didn't trust that he wouldn't simply decide not to reintegrate with his memories upon receiving such a note, because he'd decided Severus had gone insane. But most importantly, he didn't trust him around Potter. He'd laid his hands on the boy, and he'd struck him. He'd been mere inches away from beating him bloody, from doing far worse. No, he could not permit him to be around Potter ever again. Which meant, unfortunately, that Potter would have to make do without occlumency. He sighed. Everything had been so much simpler when he'd still lacked a conscience.
"Choked on an Easter egg found in a fourth-floor corridor," he wrote. "Drowned in the swamp left by the Weasley twins."
He scrubbed at his eyes. Easter had brought him no reprise, merely hours spent in the company of the Dark Lord, who insisted on knowing Dumbledore's whereabouts. He had not been pleased when Severus had answered, quite truthfully for once, that he knew nothing whatsoever about them. He did seem quite pleased, however, with the progress he was making on obtaining the prophecy, which made Severus uneasy. He thought of the corridor which filled Potter's mind at night. There was a knock on the door.
"Lupin," Severus said, narrowing his eyes, "what brings you here?"
Lupin stepped forward. "Something best discussed inside, if I may."
"I think not," Severus said, blocking his way. "I prefer to keep my quarters a vermin-free zone, you see."
Lupin pointedly glanced down the corridor. "I wouldn't disturb you if this wasn't important."
"What's of import to you does not necessarily dovetail with that which concerns me," Severus said, but he stepped aside. "Well?"
"It's come to my attention that you're no longer teaching Harry occlumency."
"Indeed, I am not, nor will I ever again."
"Please, Severus, you must please reconsider. There is nothing more dangerous than him." He changed tracks midstream, as though in deference to Severus.
"Ha!"
Gaining access to Harry's mind.
"I'm aware, and no, I will not reconsider.
Severus, please. What Harry did, breaking into your pensive like that, it was wrong. So much for Potter keeping a confidence." Dear God, was Severus that far gone? Had he actually started romanticizing the boy? "But he knows that, believe me. It won't happen again. I am sure of it. And I realize that you may not trust him, and you have every right to be angry. But is that really sufficient reason to deny him?"
"You know nothing of my reasons,"
Severus said softly, taking a step toward Lupin.
"Nothing. As always, you believe you have all the facts when you have none."
"Then why? If you'd only explained them to me, then maybe I could—"
"I don't need to justify myself to you. It's none of your business."
Lupin paused for a moment, wringing his hands. Then, "Do you think Dumbledore would have—"
"Dumbledore is not here," Severus cut him off, "and I don't answer to you. So kindly stop wasting my time."
He opened the door.
"Leave. Now."
Lupin hovered, then, shaking his head a little, stepped out into the corridor.
"At least think about it. I'm begging you," he said, a mere instant before Severus slammed the door in his face.
The trouble was, Severus did. He thought of the Dark Lord and of the corridor in Potter's mind, thought of the fact that he did not know Dumbledore's whereabouts, that he was forced to rely on other Order members who might have been entrusted with that information purely on account of not spending their spare time in close proximity to the Dark Lord. But he was stuck.
"Slammed against a tree by Hagrid's half-brother," he wrote in late May. "N.B. Sedating a giant not dissimilar to sedating Hippogriff. Only dosages vary."
He failed to report Hagrid simply because losing any ally against Umbridge seemed inadvisable. The pattern of previous years held stable. Potter did not die once throughout the duration of OWLs. In fact, Severus saw neither hide nor hair of him beyond mealtimes, not until Umbridge ordered him into her office, demanding Veritas Serum to interrogate Potter.
"He's got Padfoot! He's got Padfoot at the place where it's hidden!"
As if Severus hadn't got the very same message already from Potter's mind. The boy couldn't have projected his thoughts any more loudly whilst staring fixedly into Severus's eyes. Unfortunately, Potter's refusal to trust his good sense meant that Severus could not even drop a vague hint that Granger, perhaps, might be able to pick up on without chancing Umbridge understanding it too. And so he denied any knowledge and left Potter in her hands.
He took the steps two at a time and headed for some distant, secluded corner in the far courtyard, cursing Dumbledore's choice of communication all the while. It was all well and good to send and receive messages like this if one was outside the specter of prying eyes. Surrounded by children of Death Eaters in the dungeons, he lacked the same luxury. As soon as he was hidden from sight, he conjured the doe. "Go to headquarters," he instructed her silently. "Find any Order member and tell them that the Dark Lord has captured Black and is holding him at the Department of Mysteries. Tell them to alert Dumbledore, now." He watched her canter off into the night, ill at ease. Damn it, if only Minerva hadn't been taken off to St. Mungo's. She had known where Dumbledore was, he was sure. Time ticked by. He had just decided that he had better go check on Potter when a silvery shape descended from the sky, causing him to freeze. "What the fuck are you on about, Snape?" it said waspishly in Black's voice. "I'm right bloody here, and we don't need to alert Albus. He's due here shortly anyway. I'll be sure to tell him you've utterly gone off your rocker when he arrives. Fuck. Fuck, 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 fuck. How could he have been so bloody stupid?" He did not stay to think it through, taking off for Umbridge's office at a run instead. He needed to get to Potter immediately, prevent him from falling straight into the trap. The office was empty. Cursing internally, he made his way back to the ground floor and through the entrance hall, and as he strode past the stairs to the dungeons, he caught a flash of blonde hair in the corridor below. Draco! He consciously straightened, forcing himself into stillness as the boy ascended the stairs sluggishly, lazily. Calm. He needed to project calm.
"I need to speak to the headmistress, but she appears to no longer be in her office. You are with her. You wouldn't happen to know where she has gone."
Draco's mouth was a moo of distaste. "She sent us away when we were doing such a good job, too. Like I'm not trustworthy, me. Took off with Potter and the rest of them because Granger was going on about—"
"I care little for whatever drivel Granger was spouting. As I said, I need to speak to the headmistress. Do you know where she took them?"
"I shouldn't, really."
"But you do."
A sly smile crept over Draco's lips. "Well, I wasn't going to just let her throw me off to the side like that, was I? So I snuck after them. They went to the forest, but—" the smile slipped into another pout. "I didn't especially fancy going in there."
"And how long ago was this?"
Draco shrugged. "I don't know, a while."
"Very well,"
Severus said, dismissing him with a curt nod and turning away. He made sure to keep his strides leisurely until the front doors fell shut behind him. Even then, he didn't allow himself to break into a run, lest Draco decide to snoop some more. The forest lay dark and silent before him. No sign of Potter or Umbridge anywhere, when surely they ought to have returned by now. As soon as he was shaded adequately by a copse of trees, he conjured the doe anew.
"Potter mistakenly believes Black to have been captured. Obviously, the Dark Lord intends to lure him to the Department of Mysteries to get hold of the prophecy. Umbridge took him to the forest, but they haven't returned, so I shall search for him there. Gather the order and get to the Ministry as soon as possible, and for fuck's sake, Black, stay put like the good dog you are. Somebody needs to wait at headquarters to inform Dumbledore of what has happened."
Another reason why Patronuses were bloody useless, he thought, as she vanished off into the night. They just took far, far too long to traverse any significant distance. He could only pray that they would get there in time. He stood inside Dumbledore's office, amidst smashed knick-knacks and broken instruments littering the floor.
"Dead," he said.
"Yes," Dumbledore said, looking tired and old, not at all like a man who had just defeated the most powerful dark wizard in the world. Severus should have been happy. He should have been elated at the news of Black's death, so desperately longed for so many years. But surrounded by the evidence of Potter's grief, he felt only hollow and vacant.